Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to Africa Link. It's Thursday, the 3rd of May. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
And my name is Jen Nyinge. As usual, we are live on Facebook, DW Africa. And if you're already there, give us a like.
Coming up, it's World Press Freedom Day. African countries do not make it into the top 20 in the World Press Freedom Index. But in Gambia, journalists are enjoying newfound freedom since former President Jammeh left power.
Everybody is free. The media is very free now. In fact, we have got our freedom to a level that some are even abusing that freedom too. Because now you can say anything.
And it's a milestone for DW as we turn 65 today, and our Ghanaian fans have been telling us why they love listening to us.
DW, I do like their news, especially the African news.
The few times I followed DW, I've realized that they don't just do stories, touch and go. They rather would want to invest time and get to the bottom of it.
Plus, get to know who the winner of DW's Freedom of Speech Award is.
Yes, indeed. Well, before all that, let's first listen to what has been happening around the world.
I'm Sertan Sanderson with DW News. At least 77 people were killed as dust and rainstorms hit northern India on Wednesday, with the states of Uttar Pradesh, Rajasthan and Punjab most affected. More than 140 people were injured. The Agra district of Uttar Pradesh, home to the famous Taj Mahal, was one of the worst hit. Thunderstorms with gusting winds are expected to continue across the region throughout the day. Thousands of South African gold miners who picked up a fatal lung disease on the job have reached a breakthrough out-of-court settlement worth $400 million in a class action suit against several mining companies. The miners developed silicosis, an incurable disease caused by inhaling silica dust from gold-bearing rocks. They launched their legal action against companies that include Anglo American, Anglo Gold Ashanti, and Harmony Gold 6 years ago, saying they were not provided with adequate protection after apartheid rule ended in 1994. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has called for calm in the Central African Republic, where at least 24 people were killed in attacks in the capital, Bangui. The violence erupted earlier in the week when armed militia stormed a church in the middle of a service, killing worshippers and a priest. In response, a mob burned a mosque and lynched two people believed to be Muslim. The violence has raised fears that the country could once again plunge into a bloody sectarian conflict. You're listening to DW News. Police carried out a large-scale raid at an asylum center in southern Germany after a failed attempt to deport an African refugee. The 23-year-old from Togo, whose deportation to Italy was prevented by a group of up to 200 asylum seekers earlier in the week, was recaptured during the operation, which involved hundreds of armed officers. German Interior Minister Horst Seehofer heavily criticized the migrants involved in hindering the deportation.
It is a slap in the face of law-abiding citizens. The right to reside cannot be trampled underfoot this way.
German investigative reporters say that during the Cold War, West Germany planned to procure chemical weapons. Recently disclosed US and Germany military files show that in 1963, West Germany's defense minister, Kai-Uwe von Hasse, secretly asked the US to supply his government with chemical weapons for the event of a Soviet attack. Washington apparently considered the proposal in detail, but in 1966 ultimately decided against a transfer of chemical arms. DW has decided to give its annual Freedom of Speech Award to Iranian political scientist Sadegh Zibakalam, who faces prison in Iran for remarks he made during a DW interview earlier this year. Zibakalam, a political science professor at the University of Tehran, is one of the country's most recognized political analysts and has become a prominent representative of the skeptical sections of civil society in Iran. He is appealing the court decision and has not been taken into custody yet. DW's Freedom of Speech Award recognizes a person or initiative which is distinguished in its advocacy for human rights and freedom of speech, and its announcement this year coincides with DW's 65th anniversary. And for more news and information, please log on to dw.com. I'm Sertan Sanderson.
You are listening to DW's Africa Link program with me, Zipporah Nyambura.
And my name is Jen Nyinge. Thank you for joining us live on air and on Facebook. Feel free to take part in the program by sharing your thoughts and opinions on the stories we are covering.
And today we kick off in Gambia. Today is the World Press Freedom Day, a day set aside to celebrate the fundamental principles of press freedom. The theme this year is keeping power in check, which has not been easy for many journalists in African nations, where they continue to face suppression and intimidation. Once again, no African country in the top 20 World's Press Freedom Index. Ghana is leading at position 23, followed by Namibia in the 26th spot.
However, some countries like Gambia have improved, moving 21 places higher from position 143 to 122. After years of authoritarian rule, journalists in Gambia are returning to work without fear and intimidation. But does new freedom of expression match the skill set needed for responsible reporting? DW's Fred Muvunyi is just back from the Gambia, and this is what he found out.
Assalamu alaikum badenulum. Kibarol dinata wale sindala kabo Radio Gambia.
It's the voice of a fearless journalist on Gambia's national radio station. 65-year-old Sergio Barro is a famous newsreader and newspaper translator in the local Mandinka language. The Gambia's former president, Yahya Jammeh, singled him out and mocked him, but he stood firm.
Personally, I was very much monitored and followed by the agents because they thought that I am one of the opposition journalists in the country.
When Gambians went to the polls at the end of 2016, journalist Barro was optimistic that President Yahya Jammeh would be defeated. Yes, it happened. But days later, Jammeh changed his mind and made a shocking statement. Because of his language proficiency, Barro was forced to translate for the man he wanted to leave power.
I was so bitter. You know, I can't do anything. What I did was, when they gave me the script, I read through it, then now it's for translation.
It was only after Jammeh was forced out of power that veteran journalist Barro could finally do his job freely.
Everybody is free. The media is very free now. In fact, we have got our freedom to a level that some are even abusing that freedom too. Because now you can say anything.
However, blossoming of the press is not matching the needed skills. And that worries Gibaru Jane, a professional media trainer in the Gambia.
We have a crisis of capacity. So you may consider it as over freedom or abuse of the freedom. I consider it as absence of capacity. Because a well-trained journalist will know what the limitations are, will know what the do's and don'ts are.
Gambia's press union is aware of the problem. As much as they're pushing for the decriminalization of press offences, the union's Secretary General, Saiku Jammeh, is busy preparing training for young reporters.
Now that Jammeh left, all of them wanted to do national news. They want to cover politics. They want to cover, you know, business and trade. They want to cover almost everything. And it's a new thing for them. So therefore, some of them are making mistakes. But that is not entirely their fault. That's why issues such as capacity building, issues such as dialogue and professional ethics, are here, and then they will continue until such time that we arrive at that desirable point.
The Gambia's constitution guarantees freedom of the press and speech. However, under President Jammeh's rule, these rights were not respected in practice.
Crispin Mwakideo there with that report compiled by Fred Muvunyi, who is just back from the Gambia. Zippy, today being a World Press Freedom Day, what are people saying on our Facebook page?
Well, we did ask what are the issues affecting the press in your country. And Isaac Godwin says, Nigeria journalists are awesome, although few are biased and more politically motivated.
And we have this one from Isaac Kosa Godwin, and he says Nigeria journalists are awesome, although few are biased and more politically motivated.
Moki Obi says, DW Africa, the issue facing journalists in Nigeria is that if you say the truth, you die. Journalists should continue to say and defend the truth without regards to what the government might do.
Thank you so much, Ramzi, for that comment. We'll come to your comments much, much later. And moving on now in marking World Press Freedom Day here at DW, we are recognizing a man who has chosen to speak out and challenge those in power, risking his freedom to do so. Sadeka Ziba Kalam is the winner of this year's DW Freedom of Speech Award. Ziba Kalam faces a possible 18 months in prison after he criticized the Iranian government over a protest there in 2017.
Now, the 69-year-old political scientist has vowed to keep on expressing his opinions despite the official threats against him. Reporters Without Borders have ranked Iran 164th on the press freedom list. This is what Ziba Kalam told us after receiving the good news.
First of all, I am very honored to have received this valuable prize. And I sincerely believe that there are many men and women in Iran who would deserve much more than I do, because they have suffered far more than I suffered because of the lack of freedom of speech.
That was an Iranian academic and the winner of this year's DW's Freedom of Speech Award. And he was speaking to us earlier from Iran. Zippy, such a good feeling to be recognized for your work.
Yeah, of course. And you know, here, it's also a milestone for us here at Deutsche Welle, because as Germany's international broadcaster, we just turned 65. Over the years, Deutsche Welle has become a worldwide multimedia network, reaching more than 157 million people weekly. Here at Deutsche Welle, we broadcast in 30 different languages, and we have our trusted journalists across the world. When it was founded in 1953, it was a different world from today. And our Director General, Peter Limburg, explains which role it has changed over the years.
I think we once were the voice for the Germans abroad. Now we are here for informing people around the world. And this means that we stand for freedom of press, we stand for freedom of speech, and the most important thing is to bring information to those who don't have access to information in their proper own countries. We have a quite strong brand here with Deutsche Welle, and 96% of our users think that we are reliable. So I think if you have a strong brand, you have the chance to get through to the audience.
DW's Director General Peter Limburg. And now let's head to Ghana, one of the African countries with deep connections with Deutsche Welle. Isaac Kalechi has been speaking to some listeners and partners about the DW's presence in the country.
DW is held in high esteem in Ghana, where it's very popular with those looking for interesting and credible reports across the continent and other parts of the world. For many years, Ghanaians have relied on local radio and TV stations partnering with DW for the latest in news, sports, entertainment, and also technology. Their reasons are clear.
DW, I do like their news, especially the African news. I log into their website to read more African news, especially. And they delve into the African news more. I wish to let them have a frequency in Ghana.
The few times I followed DW, I've realized that they don't just do stories, touch and go. They rather would want to invest time and get to the bottom of it. And that's one thing I think stands out for them. So I'd want more of them in Ghana.
Local partners say DW has given them an opportunity to reach a larger audience.
My name is Carl Kenneth Ofori, and I'm the programs manager at Radio Universe 105.7 FM in Accra. DW means a lot to us in terms of the training that they've given us, and also in terms of equipment and programs. Some of the feedbacks that we get from our listeners is that they want more African programs.
My name is Kwesi Enimejei, General Manager for Radio Print, EIB Network. To Deutsche Welle, at the heart of Europe, you started it all. And journalism, as we know now, has moved beyond just mere reporting. And you have really stood up and set the standard.
Isaac Kalechi there, reporting from Ghana. Welcome back once again to the program. My name is Jen Nyinge.
And I am Zipora Nyambura, also taking this opportunity to welcome our listeners on Facebook. Carl Kenneth Ofori says, great work. And James Chua says, nice. So happy to hear from you. Please keep writing us and we will read when we can.
Yes, indeed. Coming up in the next 15 minutes, Kenyan High Court considers decriminalizing homosexuality. We will hear what it means being a gay in Kenya.
I would say that I'm relatively openly gay.
You know, my friends know that I am, that I haven't had the conversation with my parents per se. I've had it with my siblings, but then it's basically more of a don't ask, don't tell situation with me.
We will also hear about a Cameroonian model causing a stir in the fashion world in France.
That's right, Zippy. But before that, let's head to Dakar, where the 13th edition of the Senegal's Contemporary African Art Festival is taking place. Today, African artists don't pay a lot of attention to their own art scene in Africa. They rather look out for Europe or America. One group of artists would like to change that.
You're right, Jane, and they have traveled overland from Lagos through several West African countries by bus and took 2 weeks to reach Dakar as part of the Goethe Institute Nigeria Mobile Residency Program. Our correspondent Emmanuel Alande has more.
Aboard a rusty, faded yellow school bus that may have seen better days, a group of artists set off from Lagos 2 weeks ago. 5,000 kilometres later, the six artists from different West African countries and Germany arrived in Dakar for the International Contemporary Art Biennale. Travelling through Nigeria, Benin, Togo, Ghana and Ivory Coast, the Mobile Museum is curated by Emeka Udemba, a Nigerian artist. His project is called Stretch Terrains.
Stretch terrains like connotes movement and a change of space or environment. The concept is for the artists that are invited to kind of approach or interrogate various issues as we travel along. The whole idea of the Mobile Museum is to question the idea itself of what a museum should be like.
Ray Cleaver Agbo from Ghana is one of the artists on the Stretch Terrains Mobile Museum. All the artists' artwork will be exhibited at the Goethe Institute in Dakar.
The real essence of this tour is to live what really goes on from one country to the other when it comes to Africa.
Artworks by 75 artists from 33 countries are being exhibited during the Biennale, but it's unlikely anyone else travelled so far by road to get here.
If this bus hasn't been taken care of, I don't think we can use it today as a museum because it now have a purpose in another type of life. It goes at the pace of a turtle, but definitely it gets to its destination.
Despite the bumps and occasional breakdowns, through his project, Emeka Udemba explores the concept of travel, destination and ambition.
Within the African, the African continent, artists from Africa want to exhibit or to travel abroad. And traveling means Europe. Most of us, our sight is focused on Europe or on America. What happens in our region is actually ignored. A typical artist in Africa will know, will have more contacts to artists in Europe than their neighbours.
The Red Hour, the theme for 2018, is taken from a poem by Aimé César, a celebrated writer and one of the founding fathers of Negritude, the black consciousness movement that sought to assert pride in African cultural values undermined by colonial powers.
We've gone through colonialism, we've gone to post-colonialism, but it's time to kind of really question ourselves. We have a lot going for us here. We should explore it, even politically, economically. Africa must save itself. The solution to our problems is not in Europe or in America. I think the period has come not just to blame others, but to reflect on ourselves and find, you know, practicable answers to what's facing us today.
Though the road was long, experimental artist and photographer Monsuru Alashe from Nigeria enjoyed every second.
I love adventure, so for me it's been fun. I had good times, you know.
I'd rather prefer sleeping in the bus, although we had the comfortable times where we had to sleep in hotels. But I think the fun for me is more is when we are sleeping in the bus and outside in the open field.
Monsoru Alashe, an artist from Nigeria, winding up that report by Emmanuel Lande.
Speaking out.
Homosexuality has largely remained a taboo in Africa. In fact, it is illegal in 32 of Africa's 54 countries. In Kenya, the lesbians and gay community are still awaiting the High Court ruling on a case seeking to decriminalize same-sex unions.
Now, those caught in the act face a jail term of up to 14 years. For many like Noah, which is not his real name, this ruling is life-changing. He talked to our correspondent Kathleen Omwantho in this report presented by Sela Oneko.
I would say that I'm relatively openly gay.
You know, my friends know that I am, that I haven't had the conversation with my parents per se. I've had it with my siblings, but then it's basically more of a don't ask, don't tell situation with me.
In Kenya, homosexuality is illegal. Under the penal code, those who are found guilty of engaging in gay sex can be sentenced for up to 14 years in prison. This means that many like Noah live in constant fear. The National Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission has responded to at least 1,700 cases of abuse or mistreatment.
We're talking about the right to not experience violence simply because you identify as lesbian, gay, or bisexual. So one thing that we reiterate over and over is that this case is not about same-sex marriage. This case is not about non-consensual sex. This case is not about sex with minors. This case is quite simply about what two adults are allowed to do consensually in the privacy of their home without governmental interference.
In Noah's view, it is time for Kenya's High Court to repeal the colonial-era law.
The decriminalization of homosexuality would be a great start because it will put us in a position where we are no longer targeted. Because, you know, you find a lot of people who are targeted in the sense that police or people collaborate with police to arrest you and then bribe you or scam you or threaten you and blackmail you. And so it will take away the power from these people.
On the streets of Nairobi, it's hard to find someone who openly agrees with Noah.
I feel they are ungodly. They are against our human morals, and I think they should not be allowed in Kenya.
I don't think it's okay. Yeah. I think it should be talked about. Yeah. It's not something that should be ignored. Yeah.
That's not right. According to the Bible, according to all religions, it should not be allowed.
According to the National Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission, even if the High Court rules that the law should remain in place, the fight to sensitize Kenyans on the issue of gay rights will continue.
So we're not at a place where I think we're able to convince 99% of Kenyans that this is something they need to accept. But what we need to be able to do is have laws that say these people are protected and then have the people responsible for enforcing those laws be able to do that.
Noah hopes that the court will repeal the law so that he can live a life where he doesn't constantly have to look over his shoulder.
Sela Oneko there, presenting that report by Kathleen Omwantho.
And Jane, as you are aware, of course, as Kenya continues to discuss about whether they should decriminalize same-sex unions, award-winning Kenyan author Binyavanga Wainaina has announced he will marry his boyfriend Ali next year, and he comes from Kenya.
That's interesting because right now I'm just looking at his Twitter handle and Wainaina says, I knelt down and asked my love for his hand in marriage. I am beside myself with excitement that he has agreed to spend the rest of his life with me. That is what he's saying. And let me tell you, Zippy, this will continue to be a hot topic, not only in Kenya, but I think across the continent. It's going to trend for some time now.
Yeah, you're right, Jane. So we wait for the court ruling on that.
Absolutely.
Use on.
Now, Cameroonian model Nixon Yannick Mpek has taken the global fashion industry by storm. The 23-year-old who goes by the name Nixon Joris on the runway has even modeled for David Beckham and Calvin Klein.
Nixon moved to France at the age of 15. Now he has a plan to fuse African and European fashion and start a fashion business back home in Cameroon. DW's Danny Mittman caught up with him in Italy during his recent modeling assignment.
Nixon Yannick Mpek goes by the name Nixon Joris for his work. He's modelled in Paris, London, Switzerland, and today he's on the catwalk in Italy's fashion capital, Milan.
Je suis pas né à Paris, je suis né au Cameroun. À Ezeka, en fait, c'est une petite ville à une heure de trajet de Yaoundé.
I wasn't born in Paris. I was born in Cameroon, in a small town called Ezeka, about an hour away from the capital, Yaoundé. I moved to France when I was 15. My father sent me away because he wanted a better future for me. He thought it would be easier to earn a living in France because it's really tough in Cameroon. I know loads of people who've left because, whether you've got a degree or not, there are few opportunities. We won the win!
Par le football qui est une passion nationale du Cameroun, mais tout le monde ne peut pas être footballeur, même si on a le talent, on ne peut pas demeurer toujours valeur au Cameroun.
Football is our national passion, but not everyone can become a top footballer. Unfortunately, if you want to get a job, it's all about who you know. My father understood this very quickly, and that's why he sent me to France.
But Nixon's initial choice for his new life in Europe didn't quite live up to his father's expectations.
Donc avant j'étais footballeur, je jouais en Suisse, en deuxième ligue suisse.
I used to play football for a Swiss team, but my dad wasn't happy about it. Like all parents, he wanted me to concentrate on school and studying, so I gave it up.
Dès que j'ai eu mon bac, j'ai commencé dans le mannequinat. Donc j'ai été repéré par un
As soon as I got my school leaving certificate, I started working in fashion, initially as a model. I was spotted by an Italian agent from Rome who was in Paris looking for young models. I said, no problem. That's how I began my first experience in fashion.
In spite of his father's initial worries, Nixon's carved himself a successful modeling career in Europe, including his first time on the catwalk at Milan Fashion Week this year. Nixon's now 23, and although he enjoys modelling, he has other plans for his fashion future, which involve combining his European present with his African roots.
Bah, la mode, elle est très restrictive, elle est très fermée, et c'est pour ça que j'ai des projets en fait. J'ai des projets de créer une agence de mannequinat au Cameroun.
Fashion's really at a standstill in Cameroon, and that's why I have projects there. I want to set up a modelling agency in Cameroon, and I'm creating my own clothing label. I really want to try to modernize fashion in my own country, and I think my experience here in Europe can bring something to African, especially Cameroonian fashion. I think it will be great for African fashion.
Nixon says he's already got potential European and Cameroonian customers waiting for his creations to come out.
Such an incredible story of Cameroonian model Nixon Yannick Mpek, and that report was compiled by DW's Danny Mitzman. It's really nice to hear positive stories about young Africans.
Yeah, I think that is a step. What is doing fusing African and European fashions together?
Absolutely. And Zippy, we are still receiving congratulatory messages because today we are 65 as DW.
Yeah, you're right. Our WhatsApp user from South Africa says, happy 65 Operations Day. More grease to your elbows.
Teresa from Freetown, Sierra Leone says, I love everything about DW because they update us with news. I have a lot of memories being with DW this short time. Happy birthday to you with blessings and strength.
Nathaniel Mukalenga from Nigeria says, it's not easy to survive 65 years without any problem. Congratulations on your anniversary. I stand with you.
Thank you so much for that message. And we have this one from Ayusa, who didn't leave their name.
He says, well done. Is that the retirement age in Germany?
A good question.
Absolutely. And we come to the end of the program. My name is Jen Nyinge.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. Bye for now.